You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
It seems that everywhere we turn these days, we're being told that we need to return to the kitchen, that cooking fresh, made-from-scratch meals is the key to physical health, to family well-being. Sounds perfect, right?
Well, not so fast. According to a new study, preparing and cooking family meals places significant stresses on a lot of families and poses a simply impossible task for others. And despite more dads getting involved in the work of getting the meals on the table, a lot of the burden still falls on mothers. So with that in mind, have home-cooked family meals become an unrealistic expectation today? Are there other solutions we can look to in order to feed our families and hang on to our sanity?
We're joined now by Sarah Bowen and Seneca Elliott. They're associate professors of sociology at North Carolina State University. They're the co-authors of the new paper, The Joy of Cooking? Sarah, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Seneca, thanks to you as well.
Glad to be here.
So, Sarah, let's start with the big question here. Are home-cooked family meals an unrealistic expectation for today's families?
Well, first of all, contrary to the stereotype that poor people especially are eating a lot of fast food, a lot of the families that we interviewed, both the lower income and the middle class families, were cooking a lot. They were cooking between 4 and 5 nights a week on average, with some people cooking more. So they are cooking a lot, the poor families, largely because it's the cheapest thing to do, and the middle class families because they thought it was important. One of our critiques is that at the same time, the ideal of what counts as home cooking and what counts as good food and, in a sense, good mothering keeps ramping up and is harder and harder to meet that kind of standard.
Is part of it that we have this sort of Norman Rockwell version of the family dinner in our head, that it had to be this everything from scratch meal that mom whipped up and put on the table at exactly the same time every day? Do we need to let the idea of the family dinner evolve?
I think, we do. When you hear about how we need to get back in the kitchen and how that's the path to good health and good families, we do have this image in our head of what it would look like. And we spent a lot of time both observing families while they ate and then interviewing a lot more families. And what we found was that it didn't look like that for a lot of families. And they were doing it. They were cooking at home. But it wasn't this idealistic, joyful experience all the time.
And Seneca, in those studies, what were some of the most common complaints you heard from the moms, usually in the family, about preparing that family meal?
Well, the moms across the board faced a lot of issues just around the time to prepare these meals. And the kinds of constraints they experienced might have varied from working class and poor families to middle class families. But everyone was pinched for time for different reasons. So, for example, a lot of the families that we interviewed, both parents, if there were both parents in the house, were employed. They were often employed in jobs that had unpredictable work schedules. They might not know their hours, their days, their shifts ahead of time. They often worked non-standard hours. And so all of these things compounded the difficulties that they had around creating this ideal family meal. And the middle-class families are typically also dual income. We had families who were trying to get a business up and running, professionals who were putting in a lot of face time and experiencing the phenomenon of overwork that so many Americans experience. And so they, too, were struggling. So they would try to do things on the weekends to expedite the family meal, like prepping vegetables, but still said they always felt like it wasn't quite right and it was never quite enough.
Right, and that's an interesting thing, Seneca, that came up in your study, is that middle-class moms had that kind of difficult choice to make between spending quality time with their children, which you're supposed to do as a good parent, or cooking. It was one or the other.
Right, and so we talked about time use. Studies show that time spent cooking has decreased for Americans, but at the same time, time spent with children directly engaged in care and engaging with children has actually increased. And so that's part of that expectation for parents to really intensively be with their children, to shuttle them to various activities that perhaps in the past and we might have thought they would get their physical education, they would get extracurriculars in a school setting, But increasingly these things are happening after school hours, and parents are doing a lot of the effort to get their kids to these programs.
And Sarah, you mentioned earlier that part of the question here is what counts as a home-cooked meal? We keep hearing messages, don't eat processed food, don't eat prepared food, don't eat takeout. It only counts if you, it's only healthy if you make it yourself, more from scratch, the better. Is that tension, is that adding to, I guess, guilt for the nights we make fish sticks for the kids?
I think especially for the middle-class moms, it was. And they talked about, you know, feeling bad because they forgot to soak the beans, so then they had to use canned beans, or they couldn't put beans into it, or that they weren't eating enough fresh produce, or with the middle-class moms, they talked about how they couldn't afford to get as much organic food as they felt that they should be feeding their kids. And then with the poor families, they had different kinds of constraints, and it was related in part to money, and we know a lot now about, there's a lot in the news about how healthy food and especially fresh produce and lean meats and things like that cost more. But then another issue was that quite a lot of the families didn't have reliable transportation, and so they would shop once a month, and if you're shopping once a month, you're not going to buy a lot of fresh produce because it's going to go bad before you could use it. So they had constraints also in terms of whether they could even come close to making these ideal meals.
Well, Seneca, let's talk about fathers here. Why aren't they more involved in the cooking of these, you know, idealistic home-cooked meals?
Well, so those time use studies on the time Americans spend cooking, they does show that women have decreased their time spent cooking, and men have increased theirs slightly. It hasn't made up for the gap, and women are still doing more of the cooking than our men, but we don't want to suggest, and we hope our piece doesn't suggest, that men aren't involved in cooking in many homes. We've actually heard from a lot of men who say, hey, wait a minute, I cook. And so we don't want to discredit that. But in these households, again, because of work pressures and we also have a lot of families who are not partnered, so single mothers, and so there were fewer options in terms of having an extra person to pitch in and do the work of cooking. And the middle class households, they did have partners who were more active in the cooking, and the, of course, it's not just cooking, it's also planning, it's provisioning, it's cleaning up afterwards. As one of our participants pointed out, we think it's just about putting the food on the table, but there's a lot that goes on around that. But the moms describe themselves as the household managers, and so they might be planning meals and organizing shopping lists and making sure that these things get done. So there's a lot of invisible work that goes into preparing a family meal.
All right, so we've already got a gender issue here. There's the health, there's the money, there's the time and the stress, and that's already enough to give you indigestion when you're eating that meal. But also there's the yet another factor. If you make this food, are the kids going to eat it, especially if you're trying to make things healthy? Sarah, is that a complaint you heard from the parents you talked to?
And we said in the article that we observed a lot of meals, too, with some of the families that we did more in-depth observations with, and we almost never observed a meal where there wasn't at least one complaint about the food. And I think anyone who has kids knows that it can be difficult. They don't always do exactly what you want them to do, and food is one of those things. And for the middle-class moms, we're working really hard to try to cultivate their kids' palates and develop these healthy tastes. And for the lower-income moms, the fact that the kids might not eat it was a big risk. So because, you know, they couldn't afford to waste food if the kids refused to eat it. And so that had an effect on their cooking choices because it meant that they often would elect to make tried and true recipes or things that had been passed down, even if they were, you know, more processed or something like that, because at least they knew that the kids would eat it then.
We are talking with sociologists Sarah Bowen and Seneca Elliott about their research on the burden and the expectations that home-cooked meals place on a lot of families. And we want to hear from you, too.
Do you feel pressured to cook fresh home-cooked meals from scratch every night for your family, or do you think this is an unrealistic expectation? Are there solutions out there that you think would help, that would help you get those healthy meals on the table and retain your sanity. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking with sociologists Sarah Bowen and Seneca Elliott. They've co-authored a new study that looks at the family dinner and the burden it often places on parents, especially moms.
And we're hoping you'll join in on this one at 800-642-1234. Do you make the time to make and prepare those home-cooked meals for your family? And if so, do you value that time, look forward to it, or do you kind of dread it? And if you're a mother, do you wonder sometimes if most of the work falls on you? Do you feel that burden? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll go right to our callers now. We've got Andrew on the line in Madison. Hi, Andrew.
Hello. Yeah, I'm a stay-at-home dad with a 13-month-old, and my wife works all day long. And I do all of our cooking, fresh cooking, every day. And we're extremely low-income family because I have to stay at home. And we have found that it's actually a lot cheaper for me to do gardening and farmers markets and get all fresh produce and fresh meats and things than it is to go to the grocery store and get processed food, even like mac and cheese and stuff. It's easier and cheaper to make it yourself than to go to a grocery store and buy it.
But that's a trade-off you've chosen to make, Andrew. You don't work, so you have the time to do that cooking. If you worked, if you were working even half-time, do you think you'd have time to do the gardening, the farmer's market, the prep from scratch?
I would believe so, because before I was stay-at-home dad, we did kind of the same thing. We still continued to try to cook as many fresh home-cooked meals as possible, make our own soups, soup bases, all kinds of things like that. We didn't do as much gardening. Now that I have a little more time, it's easier to do the gardening. But I would think that I would have continued on the path even if we didn't have a child.
Gotcha. Andrew, thank you so much for the call. And Seneca, that reminds me, he's got a 13-month-old now. Eventually he'll have after-school soccer practices or dance recitals or whatever. Are those things in the moms, the families you observed, also part of the stress on getting that dinner on the table?
Yes, they're a big part of the equation, and these things are often happening in the evenings, so they can very quickly or easily eclipse or conflict with the family meal. So this is absolutely a consideration. It can mean that things are rushed, that it's hard to assemble everyone at the same time, and that kind of further adds to these time pressures that those moms are and dads are experiencing.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for the call, Andrew, and let's move on to Lauren in Eau Claire. Hey, Lauren.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thanks. How does this all resonate with you?
Oh, gosh. Well, my husband and I both work. We're very busy. And what this definitely resonates with me, by the time we pick up the kids and get home, it's 5:30, 6 o'clock, and then it's like, oh, well, geez, now it's a late dinner. What we try to do when we do cook is we try to cook in bulk. So we try to, if we're making chili or something like that, we'll make enough chili so that we can have leftovers, so that it's not an every night thing that we have to cook. But yeah, definitely, it's definitely challenging. And we've got a 3-year-old and a 6-month-old, so it's
right.
It's a lot.
Yeah,
so that's what we try to do.
Good for you. You've got a strategy there. Sounds like you're able to implement it, and that's something I have grand aspirations to do. Just what you do, Lauren, to cook ahead of time,
yeah.
Do a big. Massive cooking and bagging and freezing, whatever, on Sunday, but I almost never get to it. It's impressive that Lauren does, but what do you think about that, Sarah? Do we need to resort to things like that? Is that a new technique, just cooking in bulk? Will that help ease the burden?
Yeah, I mean, I think moms and families use different strategies depending on their schedules and you know, their work schedules and their income and lots of things. And so different families talked about different strategies, but one of the points that we tried to make was that if this is important and we hear a lot about how people need to cook, we need to talk about, are there strategies that could support families that are not just in their own kitchens? Are there things that we can do as a society if we think this is important? And so, you know, for the poor families, things like food access and wages, because having to work two jobs to make anything close to a living wage obviously affects your ability. So there are strategies that individual families are taking that work for them, and all the families are, you know, doing their best to feed their kids the way they think it's important. But one of our questions is, if we think this is important, are there other strategies that aren't just within these individual families?
What would those be?
Support them? Well, we don't know the answer. And we, you know, our study was focused on talking to these families and seeing what their situation was, not on trying to develop at this point at least any concrete proposals. But I think it's great that people are talking about food, and that's something that people in the United States are talking about a lot, and I think that's good and very exciting. And I think that we need to broaden the conversation and start talking about what that means collectively and not just within individual families and individual kids.
So if every single family more or less is struggling with this issue, maybe there's a solution outside of the family level, you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Lauren. We'll go to Tammy now in Onalaska. Tammy, hi.
Hi. I'm a stay-at-home mom who works on a couple of different jobs. I homeschool, and I do the book work for my husband's business, so forth. So I'm not your traditional stay-at-home mom. I wear a lot of hats. I have three grown children and one that's still at home, so I have a little bit of experience regarding kids eating and stuff like that. And I think probably one of the things that I see that relates to this is that it's really important to do one or two things really well. Sometimes we have a tendency to overschedule, and sometimes it's hard to say no to our kids, to be the parent, so to speak. And we want our kids to be happy. We want them to be our friends and everything like that. But you know what? We're the parent. We're responsible. So incorporate them with your cooking. Remember that when they're hungry, they'll eat. Don't let them eat snacks all the time. Don't let them eat what they quote-unquote want in between meals. Make sure they're hungry at supper time. And really remember that it's much, much cheaper to eat unprocessed foods than it is processed foods.
Tammy, thanks a lot for the call. At one point she brought up there, get the kids involved in making the food. At first, that's probably a little more work for the parents, but later it could be a time saver and it gets some buy-in from the kids. Seneca, in the families you observed and talked to, did you see that as a strategy? Have the kids be a part of the cooking?
Yes, we did. And I think this is part of the popular conversation about food and families, is bring the kids on board, get them excited about the meals, get them involved in preparing it, getting the ingredients, and then putting it together. In one of the households we observed, we watched this delightful moment where the family all assembled. They managed to get together after their busy day. We had originally, I think, scheduled to spend time with them earlier in the afternoon, and it just kept creeping to later and later, but finally managed to get everyone together and to make cupcakes. Just watching these kids with cracking eggs and getting this stuff all over them, and, you know, it was really fun. And it was just a delightful moment. But at the same time, we also saw a lot of kids being fussy, looking for attention, especially younger children, but also with older children, when their parents are trying to get a meal on the table. And a lot of the households where we spent time and observing families, the kitchens are very small. There's very little space. And so it can be very difficult to even just accommodate another individual in the kitchen because it's quite tight, so very little counter space. And things are often stacked on top of each other just to kind of get it all in. And so it kind of goes back to there are some fabulous things that people are doing, cooking in bulk, getting kids involved. But these are things that are happening in individual homes. And as Sarah said earlier, if we can kind of broaden this to really think about if we value this kind of food and putting our money where our mouth is and figuring out ways that we can make this more accessible for a broader number of people.
Well, let's see if we can get in one more caller here. Joe in Watertown. Hi.
Oh, hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. Hey, I have a two-year-old. I have another baby coming in December, and
congrats.
me and my wife, we actually run a bakery in Watertown, me and my wife, too, so we're together all day long cooking, and I think through that, we've kind of realized how close we've become and how, I don't know, how much we miss family and everything and having that connection around the dinner table, and like that's kind of the biggest memories we have was that dinner moment with our parents and just talking around the table and helping with dinner and stuff, and so anyways, I incorporate my boy every night into the dinner table. He helps me set it. He helps me make food. He helped me snap the asparagus last night. So, yeah, I think it's a new revolution. I think a lot more people are starting to realize, you know, that really getting people involved is how you really end up having a family that's close.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, Joe. Appreciate your story there. And what do you think, Seneca? Is this something people are craving? I mean, if all things were equal, would people really want to spend the time with this and sit down every night to their family? Maybe they just don't want to feel rushed while they're doing it.
Yeah, and I think food is important in our lives. It doesn't just meet a biological need, but it's long been a part of our celebrations and ways that we're social with others. And so we think there's lots of value to family meals. But also, again, to kind of think bigger, to breaking bread with friends, with neighbors, with coworkers, to thinking about how we can share this work, to thinking about how we can change our work lives to better accommodate what we'd all like to do, which is to sit down at the end of the day and eat a good meal.
All right, Seneca, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Sarah, thanks to you as well.
Thank you very much.
That's Sarah Bowen and Seneca Elliott. They are associate professors of sociology at North Carolina State University. They're the co-authors of the new paper, The Joy of Cooking, which looks at the burden that home-cooked family meals are placing on a lot of us. You can keep the conversation going over at the Central Time Facebook page.
I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.